welcome to the Scribe's Journal. I am your host, the Scribe of Worlds, and I am alone today. However, I am joined by the distant memories of an ancient past, so to speak. And today we are going to climb into a time machine and explore the life or lives of a couple different influential people when it comes to talking about faith and the impact that it has on writing. Most people will go back to the 20th century and compare C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien because their perspectives on faith and writing are very clear. Both of them talked about it a decent amount. And while both of them agreed that there should be influence from your faith into your writing, the way they did it were both very different. So most people go to the 20th century. However, there is a writer of the 19th century that influenced both of them, though in very different ways, but influenced both of them, and in fact, who C.S. Lewis ascribes a measure of influence in his conversion. And for anyone who is a Lewis fan, you'll probably know exactly who I'm talking about, and that is George MacDonald. C.S. Lewis says that the book Phantastes, which I might be pronouncing incorrectly, but it's P-H-A-N-T-A-S-T-E-S, so who knows, but said that this book was the baptism of his imagination and the beginning of his journey towards conversion to Christianity. It was the time when C.S. Lewis finally realized that there was something special about imagination, something special about that thing that for so long had been dried up and dead. And he goes into much greater length in his spiritual biography, Surprised by Joy, which I can recommend wholeheartedly. However, he says very clearly that George MacDonald is this great influence on his conversion. But then likewise, when he, C.S. Lewis, writes his book, The Great Divorce, he creates a character who is the guide to the narrator. And that guide is, in fact, George MacDonald, yet again. And he introduces himself as such. He's like, hello, my name is George MacDonald. And George MacDonald shows C.S. Lewis, or the narrator, around heaven and all that happens there, and kind of explains some of the things that are happening around the narrator. So C.S. Lewis was greatly influenced by George MacDonald. And likewise, G.K. Chesterton, the author of the Father Brown Mysteries, as well as an avid debater and theologian, credited much of his own, not necessarily writing as much as his own, I don't want to say theology either, but a lot of his thought processes, but credited a lot of his thoughts to George MacDonald, calling him one of the greatest men of the 19th century. Tolkien, on the other hand, is a very interesting comparison to both of these, because whereas C.S. Lewis found George MacDonald later in life, Tolkien actually grew up with the stories. And to him, they were good stories for children. He encouraged his own children to read them. However, in his later life, the way he writes about George MacDonald is basically saying that he is a boring individual who writes too much about religion. In my terms, he calls him preachy. He says that he has these two long diatribes about nonsense. Why are we talking so much about this stuff? You know, Tolkien, and I'll talk about this at a later point, but Tolkien believed that if you have religious sentiment in your books, it should be hidden. It shouldn't be overt. All religious things should be implicit. And MacDonald was nothing if not religiously explicit. So just some history about George MacDonald for those of you who might not know, which was me when I started this episode, or started planning this episode, I guess I should say. Now, before I really dive into George MacDonald and all of the rest of this episode, I need to say, I am not a MacDonald expert. I am not an expert on any of the people that I'm about to talk about. I only did some Google searching and read a whole bunch of articles and tried to give myself a well-rounded picture before writing up a Google Doc of notes and talking for like an hour or so. I want to preface this by saying that because if you know more about any of the people that I'm going to talk about, I would love to hear your thoughts. If you don't, then hopefully this is mostly factual, and I promise that I have tried my best without enrolling into a master's of literary studies. Though that does sound interesting, and I might have to do that at some point. Anyway, let us continue. So George MacDonald, during his time, was globally recognized. He was quite a big deal. He knew most of the writers of his time, some of them like Mark Twain or Lewis Carroll, he knew personally. Others like Longfellow, Emerson, Harriet Beecher Stowe, etc., he knew but probably didn't have as close of a friendship as he did with these other two and others within that same writing time. It's said that the Queen of England herself read and loved his stories. So he was quite the big name during his life. He was born in Scotland in 1824. He was raised by his father and grandmother. His mother died when he was about 8, and both his father and grandmother were very staunch Calvinists. For those of you who might not know, Calvinism is a set of beliefs in the Christian faith set forward by John Calvin. And what I assume that they're getting at here is the idea of predestination, and that is God has, before the creation of the world, chosen those who he will save, and he knows that. And so it is said that he was raised in this kind of environment, and when he went to Aberdeen for his university years, where he studied chemistry and physics, if you felt like you needed to know that, George MacDonald really began to grapple with this concept of, can I believe in a God who doesn't love everyone? And he came to the conclusion that he couldn't, which didn't mean that he didn't believe in God. He just didn't believe in the God that his father and grandmother had told him about. So at the end of this, he decides pretty much that he has to figure out what the love of God means in a theological and religious sense. And he comes to believe that, no, God does indeed love everyone. And this comes up later in making statements where people believe that he might believe in Unitarianism, which is the belief that God will just save everyone. There is no such thing as hell, or there's no such thing as punishment for those who reject God's will and reject his plan of salvation. So this kind of informs George MacDonald's own personal journey, not just as a person, but also as a writer. Now, before he really gets into writing, he accepts a post as a minister in a small church in England. He moves there, he marries his wife Louisa, and the church and him don't get along because, again, he has this idea of God that is different from what they have been taught. And not just that, he finds that imagination is a gift of God. God, being a creator, has given the gift of imagination, and it is our, I don't want to say responsibility or our duty, but as an act of worship, as an act of responding to God's gift to us, we in turn create and are imaginative. And so in some way, between this and then his statements that sounded like he didn't believe in hell and didn't believe in the justice of God, the church begins to pressure him to leave. And after 2 years, he finally resigns and leaves the pastoral position and never returns. So this ends his career, very short career, admittedly, but his career as a pastor. And it's at this point where he turns to publishing. So to begin with, he publishes mostly poetry and fantasy. He has 2 pretty successful poetry books, and then he publishes the Fantasties. Finally, he publishes Fantasties, and that again is the work that C.S. Lewis calls the baptism of his imagination. After about 8 years of being a published author, he finally publishes his first realistic fiction. And after these books begin to take off, he begins to see notable success. Now, to kind of put this in literary years, he was born in 1824. It was a couple years after his 30s, so we're looking at like the 1850s, maybe 1860s, where he's really starting to take off as a writer. Charles Dickens died in 1870, so it is reported that Dickens read and enjoyed Phantastes, but Dickens probably didn't read too much of his other stuff because it was probably published after he died. But people like Charles Dickens, Walt Whitman over in the Americas would have been publishing poems. Herman Melville was a fairly close contemporary publishing-wise. I didn't see any information that they might have been close. And then towards the end, Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of Sherlock Holmes, and many other things that no one else remembers but he wished he was remembered for, would have been a later contemporary and continues publishing after MacDonald's death in 1905. So that's just kind of some historical literary context as we keep going forward. People that he directly influenced, so like I mentioned, he was a close friend with Mark Twain, as well as Lewis Carroll, and then all those other names that I've mentioned. And so that's kind of the literary timepiece that George MacDonald is writing into. The stories that he is most well known for are things such as At the Back of the North Wind, which is actually one that I've read, as well as The Princess and the Goblins and The Princess and Curdie, which is a childhood favorite of mine and my mother particularly. He also wrote a book called Sir Gibbie and Lilith and lots of others that I don't recognize, but if anyone listening to this is a George MacDonald's fan, I do apologize. My reading of George MacDonald's was pretty limited to, again, At the Back of the North Wind, The Princess and the Goblins, and The Princess and Curdie, as well as some of his shorter fiction. Now, after his death in 1905, MacDonald is pretty much forgotten by the populace, and this is due to a couple of things. One, like I mentioned, Tolkien complained about, he gets rather wordy and preachy about his religious beliefs, and it's just woven so far into the story that people don't feel like reading religious texts while they're trying to read a story. That, as well as his realistic fiction, takes place in Scotland, which is all fine and good, except that he writes the deep Scottish dialect, which is nearly impossible to decipher. And so between deciphering things and then having to read lengthy essays on religion, faith, and all of this, MacDonald is kind of, especially his realistic fiction, is kind of left to the side. His fantasy works still are, I don't want to say super successful, but they're still circulated. And like I said, C.S. Lewis ends up picking up a book called Phantastes, and he proceeds to fall in love with this writer, George MacDonald. And that kind of begins a resurgence of interest in MacDonald's work, as well as kind of revitalizing and recognizing his impact on the writing world, specifically on the fantasy writing community, which is weird to say because there wasn't really a community, but George MacDonald was definitely a forerunner in writing fantasy. And he likewise was a forerunner in working in theology and religion into his works. It's said that George MacDonald would often have two stories going on in his books. The first one would be the action or the plot, what was happening in the real world. And the second one was this narrative about the spiritual journey of his characters. And this is something that he would go between. For him, it was effortless. For people reading, I don't know if that is quite the same effect. And I think that's why his popularity has declined over the past few years. That, and again, writing in heavy Scottish dialect when your main audience is not heavy Scottish dialect readers or speakers. In thinking back to stories like At the Back of the North Wind and The Princess and the Goblins and The Princess and Curdie, there's a lot of religious or theological sentiments that are listed in the story. However, they are not expressly Christian, which I think is something that is like the conversation that I had with R.C. Lloyd last week in talking about the difference between religion, religious themes, Christian themes, and Christian elements or Christian plot points. And there's a lot of things about like sacrifice or growing up or maturity, you know, or why does God allow suffering? There are those kinds of conversations without it directly saying, well, why does God allow suffering? And I would need to reread these books to really be able to make a comment about how well or how how poorly George MacDonald does this. But most of the scholars that I shouldn't say most of the scholars, but obviously people like Tolkien didn't appreciate it, and people like C.S. Lewis truly did. All in all, George MacDonald wrote 31 realistic fiction novels. He wrote 5 books of theology, as well as excerpts within his story about religion. He wrote 4 full-length children's fantasy books, as well as 2 adult full-length fantasy books, and numerous short stories, which likewise, at one point in my formative years, we got these little paperbacks that were filled with George MacDonald stories, and I remember very vividly reading those books and stories like The Light Princess and The Wise Woman and those kinds of things. Along with that, he also wrote 12 collections of poetry, though most people agree that his poetry is not on the same level as someone like Walt Whitman or Emerson, etc. Now, we could take a step back and trace his roots back to Romanticism as the idea and the influences on his life. However, we are looking at George MacDonald and his influence on the writing world, specifically the intersection of faith and its impact on writing. So instead, we are going to look ahead and study some of those who looked back and called him an influence and impact on their writing, as well as some who knew him more personally during his life. To begin, the obvious choice is C.S. Lewis. Again, as I've already mentioned, he was introduced to George MacDonald through Fantastes in his late teens. It is here that his imagination is baptized, so to speak, and this allows him to realize that there's something more than just this mortal world, and that longing for whatever is beyond this world is the thing that brings him to conclude that Christianity is the direction that he should go. So this happens in, like I said, his late teens. In 1929, he opts for theism instead of atheism, which he had been supporting. And 2 years later, in 1931, he is convinced that Christianity is the correct theism that he is supposed to follow. 2 years following, he publishes his first Christian allegorical work, which is called The Pilgrim's Regress. And here, it's a take on Pilgrim's Progress, but instead of Pilgrim being confronted with sin and vice, he is confronted with reason and enlightenment. Throughout his life, C.S. Lewis wrote 2 main series and numerous standalones, the standalones primarily being of allegorical or theological in nature. However, the 2 series are The Space Trilogy, which is Out of the Silent Planet, Perelandra and That Hideous Strength, and then The Chronicles of Narnia. He also had some unfinished work, which was published posthumously, but because it wasn't finished, we don't really know where he was going with it, so who knows if it was allegorical or science fiction. Now, in this way of writing, he is significantly different than Tolkien, who we will get to next. C.S. Lewis primarily is a theologian and then an author. A lot of people say that he is a better author than he is a theologian, which is to say, Lewis shines when he is taking theological concepts and working them into his stories. For example, you have, obviously, Aslan the Lion in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the scene where he is killed to buy back the life of Edmund, who has betrayed the trust of not only Aslan, but the Pevensey children, the rest of the Pevensey children, is clearly an allegory for the Christian realization of, I have betrayed my God and Jesus has died in my place to buy me back. However, there's other things that are not as clear-cut, other allegorical premises. For example, the changing of Eustace Clarence Scrub into a dragon and then back from a dragon. Eustace goes where he should not go and turns into a dragon, which is a short version of a longer story. And then Aslan is the only one who is able to fully change him back into a boy. And he tries and tries to do it by himself, but he can't. So there's those kinds of allusions to how Christ is the only one who can change us, who can remove the scales from us and return us from dragony, scaly self into our holy, spiritual, godlike self. And when I say godlike, I just mean that we are aspiring to be like God, not that we are gods, which I think is clear, but I just wanted to throw that out there. Lewis, in everything that he does, writes for the common man. He is a teacher, he is a theologian, he begins to do the series on BBC as World War II breaks out, where he talks about Christianity. And this audio series ends up becoming collated into Mere Christianity, which is kind of the seminal work on what are the basic tenets of Christianity, and what are the things that we all agree on. It is my opinion that C.S. Lewis becomes more of an influence on the Christian world than necessarily the literary world. However, the Chronicles of Narnia does set a lot of precedents for the way that we see portal fantasy show up throughout the rest of the 20th and 21st century. So portal fantasy is the subgenre of fantasy where people from our world or people from their world come to other worlds through some mode of transport. For example, a wardrobe, a television, a pool of water. On the other hand, he also wrote the Space Trilogy, which could be classified as science fiction, but in my reading and understanding of it, and I haven't read all of it in its entirety, but in my personal analysis of it, I find that it is more of a fantasy. However, the mode of getting to these other worlds, instead of being a wardrobe, is a spaceship. Coming back to MacDonald's influence on C.S. Lewis, though, obviously there is the Fantasties, which is just kind of the low-hanging fruit of the impact on C.S. Lewis. But coming later in his life, he writes a book called The Great Divorce, which is a response to a book called The Marriage of Heaven and Earth. And Lewis says, you know, I am not necessarily trying to compete with the author, who I believe was Blake, but I can't remember for certain, but I'm not trying to compete with the author and say that I am as good or better than Blake. However, if you are going to write about the marriage, I must write about the divorce. And in this, C.S. Lewis, our narrator, comes into a world that is the outskirts of heaven, so to speak, or the outskirts of where God dwells. He comes there on a flying bus from hell. And all through this, his ideas of what heaven and hell may or may not be, and the ideas of how we go from living in hell to being included in heaven. And that's not to imply that we die, go to hell, and then go to heaven. Even Lewis says that in his book, you know, are the things that I've seen things that happen after death or before? But regardless, when he gets to heaven, he is met by someone who introduces himself as his guide. And this is George MacDonald. And George MacDonald leads C.S. Lewis around, shows him and explains the things that are going on. And so, not only in this book, where MacDonald is very visually his guide, C.S. Lewis then compiles a work, an anthology, really, literally an anthology. It's called an anthology, anyway, of MacDonald's religious teachings. And in the opening, he says this: "I dare not say that he is never in error, but to speak plainly, I know hardly any other writer who seems to be closer to the spirit of Christ himself." And then later he says, "I have never concealed the fact that I regarded him as my master. Indeed, I fancy that I have never written a book in which I did not quote from him." And there are some really cool allusions online of places where C.S. Lewis has directly or indirectly quoted MacDonald and some of the comparisons between their respective stories. And if you want more information specifically on that, just do a couple quick Google searches, because that's what I did. And this is what we're getting, so. From the section of Surprised by Joy, which is his spiritual autobiography, C.S. Lewis says this: "I saw the bright shadow coming out of the book into the real world and resting there, transforming all common things and yet itself unchanged. Or more accurately, I saw common things drawn into the bright shadow. In the depth of my disgraces, in the then invincible ignorance of my intellect, all this was given me without asking, even without consent. That night, my imagination was, in a certain sense, baptized. The rest of me, not unnaturally, took longer. I had not the faintest notion of what I had let myself in for by buying Fantasties." So again, C.S. Lewis is definitely influenced by George MacDonald, not only in his own personal faith journey, but also in the way that he writes. C.S. Lewis turns to writing very explicitly and very allegorically of what he is going through. In the same way as MacDonald, you cannot remove the theologian from the author. C.S. Lewis's writing and his beliefs are linked inseparably. And I think he really does shine in that, in, like I was talking about with the dragon. taking some of these higher level, highbrow, theological, academic insights and applying them to a children's story that anyone can understand. And that's not to say that everyone who reads it immediately comes away with the knowledge of like, oh, wow, that's what this is alluding to. But when you read it with the mindset of what is C.S. Lewis getting at, you come away with a clear understanding of who he was and what he believed. And in his own words, he calls this smuggling theology into his writing. On the flip side, we have J.R.R. Tolkien. So Tolkien, like I mentioned, was raised with George MacDonald's stories. He read them as a child. When he was telling his own children's stories, he wrote a book called Letters from Father Christmas. And he would read them those stories as well as the stories from George MacDonald. So he had some kind of love for it. But as he got older, that love turned to more of a critical analysis of why he didn't think it worked as well. Tolkien's approach to writing is less of a theologian and more as an academic. He creates a vast history of a world, and some people say it's based off of a language. Being a linguist, he deep dives into this world that he's created, Middle-earth, and he writes out this lengthy, overall rather terrible and sad history, and then proceeded to write these stories from it. And so one of them becomes The Hobbit. This story is about a small creature who looks kind of like a human who joins these dwarves to go and get their gold back from the dragon that has overtaken their mountain hall. And people have said that this is because he is trying to create a lighter story, a happier story than most of his sadder histories from this world for his children. As a Catholic Christian, he believed that imagination was a gift from God. And in an act he called sub-creation, he believed it was more of an act of worship to create other worlds than to write about the world that he inhabited. He believed that in writing these new worlds, he was able to create, not in the way that God created in our real world, but in a way that he was able to worship the creator and the true creative glory of God in this own world. And so this really creates a very unique perspective on faith and fiction, because in one way it appears that he's separating his faith from his stories. But on the other hand, some people are saying, well, he's trying to rewrite the story that God told here. And they make analogies of like Gandalf being Jesus and dying and rising again, or coming back on the third day. But in reality, Tolkien expressly says that he hated allegory, for one. And so the insinuation, or even the outright statement that he would ever create an allegory in his world, he would have hated. While he believed that his faith influenced his work, it wasn't a separate issue for him at all. He believed that all of the faith in his writing should be implicit. People should read it and be able to understand that, yes, he is a Catholic and that, yes, he believes in all of these things, but not read it and see an allegory for faith or an allegory for Christ. He says, "The Lord of the Rings is, of course, a fundamentally religious and Catholic work. Unconsciously so at first, but consciously in the revision. That's why I have not put in or have cut out practically all references to anything like religion, to cults or practices in the imaginary world. For the religious element is absorbed into the story and symbolism." And so in my personal belief, this is a testament to the position of the faith-filled or the Christian author. Our beliefs do interact with our stories. And that's not a bad thing. It's a really good thing. Just like I was talking with R.C. Lloyd last week about how our faith should impact, how what we believe should impact what we write. But that said, when you write heavy-handed symbolism, such as the lion is Jesus, people begin to shy away from that. And we see that even in Tolkien's own perspective. He begins to shy away from that. Even though both he and Lewis had a great respect for each other, Tolkien did not have a respect for specifically the Chronicles of Narnia. He found them too simple. He found them too short. And he was surprised when they actually did start to take off. Whether in part because of this, or whether in part just because Tolkien wasn't always the easiest person to get along with, as well as having probably some mental health struggles from his time in the war, C.S. Lewis and Tolkien began to drift apart in their later years. Possibly it was because of their differences in how they wanted to write their works, with Lewis very heavy-handed in the theology and the symbolism and the imagery, as well as including different elements from all over the world. You know, you have people like Bacchus showing up, you have people from myths and fables, all wrapped up into this Judeo-Christian perspective fantasy world. Whether their respective world designs and writing styles were the cause of the separation, or whether there were other issues, most people just kind of speculate. There's no concrete evidence either way. But I do wonder if, because of that separation and Lewis's constant proclamation of how much MacDonald influenced his life, and Tolkien then recognizing the same amount of allegory in Lewis as in MacDonald, if that might be part of his rejection or objection, I guess I should say, to George MacDonald. Regardless of any of this, the contribution that Tolkien left to the literary world beyond his work on the literal dictionary of the English language and all the other linguistical work he did was allowing epic fantasy to become a successful and marketable genre. Prior to this time, obviously, you have people like George MacDonald writing fantasy, but fantasy isn't so much of a popular or a widespread thing. And with the advent of Lord of the Rings, it goes from this side little fun projects that people did while still in their main novels to being the primary thing that someone could write and actually make money off of. Now, before we continue on, both C.S. Lewis and Tolkien included each other in their stories, and this may be already known to most of you. However, in Chronicles of Narnia, the kindly professor who takes in the Pevensies during the war is based off of J.R.R. Tolkien. On the flip side, Tolkien also included C.S. Lewis in the form of Treebeard, the Ent who is very long-winded and takes forever to get anything said, which probably tells you everything that you need to know about their respective perspectives and relationship. Again, the biggest problem that Tolkien had with MacDonald and Lewis was this idea of explicitness, leaving nothing to, I don't want to say mystery, but nothing to, leaving everything just out there for anyone to see. He approached the Lord of the Rings and plotted it out as a retelling of the classic hero's epic. And while there are allusions to his faith and his belief, it is not explicit in the same way. So one example I saw of this is his approach of what he calls the eucatastrophe, or the happy ending, the final conclusion where when the story ends, it is a good ending. And Tolkien believed that a good story would end on a good note. And he would write to that end. And that's why you see those kinds of elements where even in the darkness of The Lord of the Rings, it ends on a good note and a high note. Another interesting note that I saw while browsing the internet, and again, this is after a day of Googling and reading different articles, so I am not by any means a Tolkien scholar or a scholar on any of the people that I am talking about. However, Tolkien had a great affinity for the Eucharist, which is the bread used in communion. And some people have posited that the Lumbus bread, which is the elven bread that is said that one bite could fill a man's stomach for days, is an allusion to this, the Eucharist, the bread of life. I don't know if that's true, but I do think that if it is, it's a very cool, quiet allusion that doesn't break Tolkien's, I don't want to say rule, but Tolkien's perspective or his guard against the explicitness of C.S. Lewis and George MacDonald. But Tolkien is very much an study in how the Christian or faith-filled author grapples with their own belief and how that should impact what you do or don't write. To conclude this and kind of bring it back around back to MacDonald, it's really interesting to see how both of these men, you know, one directly being influenced by MacDonald and the other one kind of having an anti-impact, so to speak, an anti-inspiration from MacDonald, continued to influence the world. And in that way, George MacDonald himself continues to influence and affect the world. The scope of MacDonald's sphere of influence might not be as big. However, the sphere of C.S. Lewis's impact, this fear of J.R.R. Tolkien's impact, is so much bigger. And in the same way as, like, scientists, they get to build on the shoulders of giants. And even though the first pillar, which is, you know, MacDonald, isn't as well known, the following pillars of C.S. Lewis, of J.R.R. Tolkien, of G.K. Chesterton, who we'll also get to, are so wide, and the effects are still felt today. And the beautiful thing is that we get to go back to Lewis and Tolkien, but we also get to go back to MacDonald. We don't just have to listen to one, you know, we don't have to just hear the newest things. We get to hear the change and the shift all the way down. So this has been a really cool time for me to learn more about these people who I've admired for so long, and to kind of start to put their ideas and their beliefs into perspectives. And at the end of the day, I think J.R.R. Tolkien and Lewis kind of provide us two characterizations for how Christians often approach the writing process. And so you have people like Tolkien who say, my writing and my faith, I don't want to say are separate, but they're separate. You know, I am going to write my story first. And then when I'm done with that, if there are elements of Christ, I'll pull those out and I'll expand on them. And then there's other people who go into writing saying, I have to write a story about Christ. I have to write things that symbolize Christ and his salvation for us. And there's not a right or wrong answer. I think there are times when we, for anyone, I think there are times when a Christian author should write like Tolkien and write a story to write a story and then see what God pulls from it. And there are times when you might have to write a story to write an allegory and to really dive into what is God trying to say through this. So I don't know where you kind of fall on that, and maybe you're not a writer, and so maybe you don't really care, and that's okay too. Regardless, I hope you enjoyed coming along on this walk with me. I hope you enjoy the next few episodes as I talk about some of the other people that MacDonald influenced closer to his own lifetime, as well as the continuing ripple effect of MacDonald's work down to our present day. Like I said, it's in that way of like building on the shoulders of giants. Or also like trees, you know, the branches coming off of a main root. And ultimately, as Christians, our main root is Jesus and it's God as the ultimate creator and creative force. And it's the Holy Spirit guiding us in what we should or shouldn't write. And I think that's a beautiful thing that we get to have as Christians that is not afforded to a lot of other people. So wherever you fall on this spectrum of preaching MacDonald to quiet Tolkien, I hope that this has been informative. I hope this has been helpful. And I hope that it's been fun. So until next time, stay safe and wander well.